Hello, everybody, and welcome to Elmtown, episode 24. Today, we're going to be talking with Jonathan Fishbein. And first things first, there's construction going on next door. So there's hammering, they're installing a floor or something, they're building a whole office. So when you hear that lovely hammering, that lovely construction sound, please just know it's temporary. Probably only going to take the next, I don't know, 6 months in any case. So yeah, please, well wishes for my sanity while that's going on. But in any case, we're going to be okay. Welcome. And I also wanted to do a little disclaimer because I just realized that I start my podcasts the same way. I basically just rip off and copy Chris Coyer from the Code Pen podcast. And so Code Pen Radio, I'm actually throw that in the timeline notes because it's a great, great show, Code Pen Radio. He always starts off his show that way and I like it too. So sorry, Chris, if you're listening, which you're not, but there you go. I like you. I like to be like you in some way. So there you go. Sponsors. Let's talk about our lovely sponsors. Number one, we have Day One, which is the company that I work for. I love Day One. We make a beautiful journaling and life archiving app for Mac and iOS and Android. We have now shipped our Android client, which is exciting. So you may use it on all platforms. And we also have a web client, which is in beta, which is fully in Elm. And we continue to develop tools in Elm too, which is exciting. Love this hammering. This is great. Next up is Daily Drip, which makes keeping up to date on programming skills easy. Daily Drip will save you a ton of time by providing quality lessons and resources for you right off the bat. Some of the topics that they include are Elixir, Crystal, React Native, Go, HTML, and of course Elm. Learn faster and more efficiently with Daily Drip and be a better developer. Every weekday, you'll get a short video, about 5 minutes long, delivered to your inbox. You can sign up at dailydrip.com using the coupon code Elmtown-2018, all lowercase, no spaces, just Elmtown-2018, and you'll get a free 14-day trial. Next, we've got Futurist, which is a new breed of innovation consultancy with digital values at its core. They believe in happy people, happy customers, and happy users. They're users of Elm, community contributors, and innovators in the open source space. They hire good people, and they do good work, and they are located all over Europe. And I know that they are also good at helping people relocate. So if you're looking for a great company to work for that's innovative and flexible and interesting with great people, go ahead and send them your information because they're pretty fantastic. And we are very grateful for them being sponsors of the show. And my English is just not in order today. I ask for your excusion. That's not even a word. I'm just making it up. Anyway, please forgive me for my broken English. I'm still recovering from a sleep deficit given to us so kindly by my 9-month-old daughter. So I'm working on getting back up there. Last but not least, we have Ellie App, who's our sponsor for hosting and bandwidth. Ellie is a very cool live editor for Elm, which most Elm listeners already know about because it's great for doing examples, doing experiments. You can compile Elm applications right in the browser without installing anything, and you can include packages from the Elm package repo. It's really a fantastic tool, and huge thanks to them for being our sponsors. Big thanks to Fergus Meeklejohn for being our producer and editor. And here's an announcement as well. A couple episodes ago, I announced a new site designed by Johnny, David Nimmo, and Aussie Hanhainen, which I didn't say his last name right. I'm sorry, Aussie. It's always hard. Aussie Hanhainen, I think, is the right way to pronounce it. Thanks to those three for doing the new site. So here's the sad announcement. It's going away now because I moved to a new podcast hosting platform that provides a site for us, just a little bit less maintenance work. So maybe that'll come back sometime in the future. But for right now, we got to enjoy that design for a full glorious month and a half before we move to a new one. So that is huge thanks to them and also apologies for the short life of it. There you go. So without further ado, let's introduce Jonathan. Thanks for being with me today, Jonathan. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and say hello?
Hey, Murphy. Thanks for having me and thanks for hosting Elmtown. I go hiking every day and I listen to Elmtown and another one, Lambda Cast, and just such an incredible and valuable learning resources, basically to learn functional programming and Elm.
Well, you are welcome. I'm glad to do what I can as well. Yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you are right now, what you do right now, and then let's get some of your background as well.
Okay, so I'm working on a site called Wongtank. And it's attempting to be a global people's think tank.
Yeah, why don't you just explain that a little bit? Because that sounds pretty interesting, but also somewhat ambiguous. Tell me a little bit more about what it does.
Sure, sure. So we're trying to basically harness crowd intelligence to address public challenges. So it's the realization that our world faces sort of wicked problems, problems that are not easily solved with just one answer, or where an answer can have a negative impact in some other area. So we want to introduce new ways of thinking to sort of address these problems. And we want to bring in diverse thinking to really generate like informed and imaginative proposals. And the best way to do that is sort of an online platform where we can sort of crowdsource these ideas.
That's interesting. So what's the motivation to the crowd that they would gather and offer ideas there?
The motivation would be, I guess, to actually make the world a better place. There are some analogies. You know, Wikipedia and Quora come to mind, and they have a different focus. They're definitely focused on general knowledge. Their Stack Overflow and Predict-It, Stack Overflow for tech problems and Predict-It for forecasting. Those platforms sort of attempt to gamify participation.
Yeah. So is that a plan here too, or is this kind of like a public service kind of thing where you would just hang out and answer questions for fun?
Yeah, I think it's sort of a combination of both. We really want to tap into people that have ideas but don't necessarily have a platform to express those good ideas. And there's Reddit, which is, they're focused on chat and sort of discussion, and it doesn't really generate workable solutions that a government, an NGO, or larger companies could actually implement. There's also something called Policy Ed that's coming out of Stanford. They actually do have workable solutions, but not everybody sort of invited to participate. Only the experts can make meaningful contributions. Everybody else is sort of can only comment.
Oh, interesting. So the idea here is that this isn't like a, oh, I'm having a hard time getting my students to listen to me in school kind of thing. This is more like a, how do we solve hunger in this part of the world or something like that? Is that?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yep.
Interesting. Wow. Okay. So that's in early startup stage then, I'm guessing.
Yeah. We're sort of in a private beta. So I'm in DC, and sort of there's a large population of people that are sort of interested in tackling those problems.
So you have kind of a small market that you can experiment with there.
Yeah, we're going after self-identifying wonks. So individuals. Yeah, it's got kind of
a term.
Yeah.
So that's why it's wonk talk then.
Exactly. It's sort of like bringing together wonks for a global people's think tank. So it's a play on words with a think tank and wonk.
Very clever. I like that. Well, then so the idea of this episode is we want to get to know a little bit about you as a community member, but also we want to know at the end how you ended up choosing Elm as the technology you wanted to go with. It sounds like you've got a journey there. So let's actually start with just a little bit of establishment about you. What's your background? What has your education and work been up to this point? Just so we can get a feel for your establishment here as a person.
Sure. So I studied mechanical engineering in school, but I quickly realized that most of the jobs are in programming. I took some online classes and was able to get a job locally. And they were using a technology called Blez. And it kind of got that name because the syntax resembled Pascal.
Okay.
It's a very specific technology and language for administering surveys.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I think under the hood, my knowledge is fairly limited, but it is reactive in the sense that it's every time you answer a question, it's continually executing the logic, so it can reroute you based on your answer. So you can sort of back up and it will re-execute.
Interesting. Okay. So that was your, that was at your first job, and this was, you did, you received a degree in mechanical engineering, or you did a partial study in that?
No, I got the degree.
Oh, okay. That's interesting that you would, that would be the case. So, so the science degree then led into online classes, and you got a job in the programming stuff. Very interesting. And so that first company with the survey management software, was that just kind of an intro and you left after that? Or are you still doing that as your main thing? What's the situation there?
So, I worked, at another place after, I moved on to, doing ASP.NET, C Sharp, web forms, and then MVC is all, and WinForms.
Okay. And this was at a different company.
I sort of moved on to a different section or department to work on some of that stuff. But then I also switched later to a different company that was using, was also using those technologies.
Okay. That makes sense. Is that your most recent thing? Are you still doing that? Is Wongtonk your full-time situation right now?
I'm working on Wongtonk full-time at the moment, yeah.
Was that a scary transition to make? I mean, are you, is this a family thing, or is this a, like, you're a co-founder and got investor dollars kind of thing?
Yeah, it's, I'm working with my father, who is more of sort of the domain expert in sort of collaborative decision-making and policy analysis. It is a startup. It's relatively cheap. I'm using serverless. So it's not, financially, it's not a huge risk. Yeah, I'm full-time working on it at the moment.
Very cool. Is this in the stage where you are, I mean, I don't want to ask too many business questions that you don't want to answer, so feel free to just say you don't know or don't want to say, but I'm just curious, are you looking forward toward investor dollars, or are you looking to bootstrap and be profitable yourselves? What's kind of your sustainability plan?
It's a good question. I don't exactly have a definitive answer on it yet. Cool. We would like, we're sort of in a private beta at the moment, so we're working with interested early adopters. Our private beta is fairly modest at the moment, but hopefully come 2018, we can sort of expand further.
Cool. Well, I hope it works out. I hope that works out well. So let's talk about, it looks like, you know, from what you said, your background is a lot in object-oriented kind of code and, you know, ASP.NET, MVC, et cetera. That's not exactly a natural lead into functional programming. So how did you find out about it? How did you make that? How did you make the learning transition, you might say?
Basically, I learned it by developing a Chrome extension for OkCupid that would graph your visitors over time. So if you change some aspect of your profile, you could see what kind of impact that had.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Data-driven dating kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I started...
Was it useful? Did you use it? Did it work out?
I actually didn't. I was more focused on developing it. I didn't actually use it too much. So, and then I got a girlfriend, so...
So the need disappeared.
Yeah, exactly. it's sort of an interesting story because I started that basically when I started working professionally in software. And I sort of went through the past like 16 years of web development in sort of like the 3 years that I sort of continually developed it and refined it. You know, it started off me querying the actual page as opposed to like actually calling their API and sort of scraping this data. And I moved on to jQuery and thought that was sort of a big productivity boost. I also sort of investigated the somewhat scary world of object-oriented JavaScript
Nice.
And, yeah, and a lot of rules associated with the prototypes. I don't know. I know you're using TypeScript. Have you ever dived into that prototype? All there is to know about JavaScript prototypes.
I have not done a whole lot of learning about it, just because in general I kind of wanted to stay in the more simple territory, so I haven't really gone deeply into that.
Yeah, and actually the other day I looked, and TypeScript is doing a lot of that for you under the hood.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I'm sort of back in that area, trying to make a wrap the Quill editor in a custom element. So I'm sort of back. Yeah.
That'd be a challenge for sure.
Yeah. And unfortunately I wish I could sort of elaborate more on the specific techniques I was using at the beginning, but source control was something that I was also introduced to. It was definitely better than what I was using, Google Docs.
Oh no, really? Wow.
So yeah, a lot of learning. I started moving more towards a functional design. At work, I was introduced to TypeScript and I started using the higher order functional libraries. I moved in order from underscore, Lodash, and then finally to Ramda. Are you using Ramda?
I have used Ramda in the past. It's a very interesting library. And I'm curious to know is that just a product of research on the internet? You said, like, I like Lodash, what else is there? Or were you hearing functional, like, buzz about functional stuff from people? How did that happen?
Yeah, that's a good question. I probably, when I was researching it, I probably didn't understand, like, why the order of the arguments was so important and why Ramda was different in that regard. But it was probably my reasoning was just probably more that it was getting some hype, and there was probably a good reason for it.
Hype can be pretty important. Okay. So you went through Lodash and then Ramda, are you still doing that, or tell me after that, what happened?
As far as development on Qubit Analytics, I mean, there was some more. I experienced Callback Hell, the Pyramid of Doom, and I moved to Promises, but not sort of going from callbacks to Promises. I there's a lot of libraries that help you tame it. I used Waterfall JS. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No, I've never used that one before.
Yeah, I mean, Promises are much easier to work with than some of the tactics you would have to use to tame callbacks.
Okay.
So that was my journey to learning sort of the foundational concepts of functional programming.
Okay, so at that point you had some ideas of what functional was, and then how did you first hear about Elm or get attracted to that?
I found Elm when I started working on Wangtonk itself. I sort of progressed through Angular 2, React, and then found Elm. And that story also is a bit well, a little embarrassing too, because there were a lot of beginner mistakes there as well.
Don't we all have those though?
yeah, that is comforting. Yeah, but Angular 2, I was convinced that it would be pretty good just because it was sort of the newest framework of 2016. React was 2015. So,
okay,
yeah, that. That's not a too in-depth analysis, but I sort of quickly realized that it wasn't so great. I love TypeScript, and I felt like it produced a lot of errors that I would normally encounter, but there was sort of a loophole in Angular 2 as far as parent-child communication, they sort of communicated, I should say, parent-child component communication. They communicated over a HTML string, and I don't remember all the details. This is over a year ago, but two variable names had to line up, and I spent 48 hours, and only after when I posted the question on Stack Overflow did I realize that the variable names, one had a capital P and the other one didn't.
Oh, that's a killer.
Yeah, man. So it's sort of a wall of shame on sort of my Stack Overflow page.
Oh, that's so funny. But that's the power of the stringly typed thing, isn't it? Strings can really get you.
Yep, exactly.
So that then tell me, as you went from Angular to React, I'm guessing that was very much because of the popularity of React as well. And then at some point, I assume you were less happy with React and thought, well, I'll take a look at Elm. Tell me about that feeling.
Yeah, so the bug with Angular 2 was annoying enough for me to consider alternatives, and I looked at React, but React also had some problems associated with it. I wanted to use React. I knew that they used JSX, but I wanted to add some typing support to my JSX file, so I wanted to use something called TSX. And what I was using with Angular 2, I was using like a RxJS inspired Redux store. And, you know, the details aren't really too critical, just more so that the way that I wanted to do it, I had to learn about React's context. And there was another way I could sort of do this is using something called Inversify. And then I thought to myself, maybe this is too complicated. I should just switch to Redux and move away from this RxJS-inspired Redux store. But that sort of brought up some additional questions, like should I use Redux Thunk, Redux Promix, Redux Saga? Also, I was using JSPM because that was sort of what Angular 2 was using. Should I switch to Webpack because that was more of in the React ecosystem? And then there were all these other questions like how do I incorporate immutable JS and should I switch to Flow from TypeScript? So,
oh man,
yeah,
it's the flood of 1,000 JavaScript questions. I've been through a similar feeling as well, I think.
It's sort of this JavaScript fatigue, and you have all these libraries and frameworks that are sort of all going off in different directions, and it's hard to get them all to work together.
Right. Yeah, I have actually felt that same feeling and been frustrated by it, and that's also part of what led me to like the way Elm's got a cohesive story, a kind of an entire system that you either buy into or you don't. And is that how you ended up feeling too when you saw it?
Yep, that's exactly it. I'd like to say sort of that Elm, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So I guess the point that I would make is you can sort of program in a style very similar to Elm using sort of more native JavaScript libraries and frameworks, but it's just not going to be the same. Elm sort of coherently packages up all these technologies to make it a much more pleasant experience.
So then tell me, how did you become convinced to try it out? Was there a point at which you said, hey, Elm looks cool, let me actually invest time in this and do it? And like, what made you feel like you wanted to become part of the community and use the tool?
I tweeted to Evan to ask a question. I was really unfamiliar with Elm, and I was doing this kind of this recursive thing in Angular 2 and React, and I just wanted to know if that was something that Elm could do, and I was really surprised and appreciative that he responded, and he's like, yeah, I mean, Elm is sort of based around that idea, And so that was just that was a good feeling that you sort of have the creator, the leader, the organizer of this whole community being so receptive and sort of wanting to help.
That's way cool. He is very good at that community participation.
Yeah, and I also I watch your videos on Egghead, so thank you oh. for publishing those. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for the compliment. I appreciate it. I hope they weren't too too silly in the introduction.
Oh, not at all.
I was a bit silly, but so if those were helpful and stuff, then how do you feel the adoption cost was once you actually wanted to get something done in Elm? Did it take you a long time to get anything that you felt comfortable with, or was it pretty quick?
It was much quicker than developing in sort of the JavaScript ecosystem. I mean, there's a lot of talk about the Elm compiler and it being helpful, and that is true. I mean, it is much easier to sort of troubleshoot if you spelled like a record property name wrong. It's going to help you sort of identify your spelling mistake, basically, as opposed to JavaScript, where the errors are much more cryptic. Undefined is not a function, or just looking at the stack trace to find out where something errored out.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So, was it difficult for you to get a grasp on the type system, on currying, et cetera, things like that? Was that a barrier to you being able to get anything done, did you feel?
I would say that I was familiar with the concepts from sort of trying to program in that style using TypeScript and Ramda. But I would say that your material and Richard Feldman's material is really accessible. And I wouldn't say that it takes too long to sort of get up and running and understanding some of those concepts.
Excellent. Okay. So, I mean, that sounds like you had a good experience getting started. Now, how long has it been since you were getting started?
So I've been working on it for about a year and a half. And I'll also say I learned about style elements, which I think is sort of the third piece to the puzzle in sort of this HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. And I actually learned about it from this podcast.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's sort of a another really compelling library. Originally, I wasn't using that, and I was sort of just using standard. Well, I was using Elm CSS, which is a huge improvement over standard CSS. But the style elements, I guess I was watching a Pluralsight video where he was explaining how JSX is really not that strange to put your HTML in JavaScript, because Angular 2, basically Angular and Angular 2, the if directives and your for directives were basically putting JavaScript in HTML.
Right.
So
yeah.
There's sort of that symmetry, and he was explaining that it's really not that crazy. And I feel like that's sort of initial hump with style elements. Because everyone sort of knows that, or has been told that you want to keep your CSS outside of your markup. But I think I was watching another video by Scott Allen where I got the idea that CSS was really designed for look and feel properties, and the properties of CSS have expanded to include more than just look and feel. They're going like the display property, the width and height. Those are really more related to markup and sort of how your content is laid out.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And so the style elements library, if you listen to that episode of this podcast, Matt will tell more about the separation between layout and style, which is a pretty interesting concept there. So that's been helpful to you. Very cool. So do you have any other closing notes? I mentioned to you in the pre-show, and I'll mention to the listeners now, some of the episodes I feel like have run a little long in the past. So we're going to try to maybe keep some of the new episodes a little bit shorter. So we're going to start wrapping up earlier than maybe we would have in the past. And that's not because Jonathan's less interesting, but it's because we're trying to make a little transition in the way the episodes are recording. So Jonathan, do you have any other other stuff that we've missed talking about before we wrap up?
Yeah, I just a couple of weeks ago, I published my first Elm package. You can find it, Elm Comment. It's sort of comments like you would find on Reddit, sort of that deeply nested recursive structure.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So if anyone's interested in using that and also helping me sort of flesh it out a little bit more, making it look a little nicer, that would definitely be appreciated.
Very cool. Awesome. I have another question to you, for you that I forgot to ask as a wrap up as well. So you said you've been working on WongTalk for about a year and a half. Is that all been Elm time, or how long has it been since the Elm decision here?
So I devoted maybe about 3 months to trying out React. I was doing some other stuff then too, but looking into Angular 2 and React and sort of reaching despair and then finding Elm.
Okay, so it's been over a year then since just working on this pure with Elm. Do you have any regrets? Do you have any things where you feel like, well, I didn't foresee this being an issue, but I'm stuck now? I mean, how do you feel about the decision over a year later?
I'm still very satisfied with that choice. I asked you, I messaged you to get your opinion on PureScript, but I think it's just good that PureScript is getting a lot of popularity, and I'm sure Evan and I think Noah has a lot of thoughts about this, but I actually don't know too much about what are the differences between the two. I'm just happy that both are being adopted.
Yeah, absolutely. PureScript is a very cool project, and it just has some different design decisions, different kind of a different feel in the community, focused on different things. And yeah, it's an excellent language as well. I think PureScript is fantastic. So that's pretty cool. And in fact, I feel the same way that you do. I ended up choosing Elm as our front end framework here at day one over a year ago, and reviewed that at when the year came and said, yeah, I wouldn't have changed this decision, and I'm glad to have used it. So that's neat. I mean, there are some rough patches. There are some things that have been difficult to work with. Particularly private package management has been a pain for us, wanting to use packages cross projects, but having these packages remain private. I feel like those are problems that can be solved painfully right now and will become much less painful in the future. Yeah. So very cool. Should we do picks? You have any picks today?
Yeah, I got one. LambdaCast, that podcast sort of goes into all the different particular points of functional programming and sort of spends a episode talking about them in detail. So highly recommend that one.
Excellent. And I've got two picks today. One is a biography, a sort of biography. Yes, a biography of Steve Jobs, that's called Becoming Steve Jobs. It's not the normal, not the main Walter Isaacson one that a lot of people would think of. It's an alternative one that I had referred to me by a different person that actually kind of shows Steve Jobs as he changed as a person over his lifetime, and the way that he learned from his mistakes at the businesses where he worked and where that he owned. And I just think it's been a very enlightening book, because I like the companies he worked at. I like Apple Computer. I really love Pixar. I've been interested in those companies. And also, I thought it's been really interesting to see Steve Jobs as a person with faults, and not so much. It seems like a lot of people tend to either put him on a pedestal and say, like, yeah, he was a jerk, but he was perfect at doing all these things. But maybe taking a more holistic view of saying, yeah, well, Steve Jobs was an interesting person who could have been better in a lot of ways, but also was really impressive in a lot of ways too. And I think that has been a valuable thing for me to listen to, just to learn about people and to enjoy learning about those companies that I like. My second pick is the ReasonML language, which is from Facebook. Now, this is a little bit complex, but ReasonML is a new syntax that looks like JavaScript that's built on top of the BuckleScript compiler that compiles OCaml to readable JavaScript. Now, that's a little bit of a pain to follow, but I don't know if you can rewind it and listen to it again. It's not actually that complex. Reason ML, I've been experimenting with, and I feel like it's a really cool way to write JavaScript. I don't want to leave PureScript out of the game. There are lots of very cool ways to write JavaScript that aren't JavaScript. But I've been enjoying Reason because it's, well, I won't get into it right now. We can go into it another time, maybe a whole nother episode. But I've been experimenting with it as a companion to Elm, writing my JavaScript through Reason and writing my app in Elm. And I want to pick it because I think it's pretty neat. It's really early on still. So it takes a lot of, the docs aren't exactly beginner friendly or in place. They're working on that and the syntax is changing rapidly, but it's a very interesting project. So I'll throw in the reason I'm looking at this over TypeScript and Flow is because Reason makes the interop between JavaScript and Reason more difficult than TypeScript and Flow. It's very explicit. So you make sure you know that you are being careful with the interop versus TypeScript and Flow. You just kind of use it and accidentally there are a bunch of holes in your type system that where you have innies and things you didn't mean to have in there. But Reason is a lot more watertight, makes the interop more intentional. And it has a completely sound type system. It has a lot of similarities to Elm's type system. And they're also focusing on readable errors that are helpful, kind of like Elm. It's kind of related to Elm in a lot of ways. So definitely recommend checking out ReasonML if you like Elm. And that's it for me. Any last words for the podcast, Jonathan?
Nope.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking your time today to share your story with us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And thanks to all you listeners. Until next time, see ya.